Welcome to Trust Radio, the Investment Trust podcast brought to you by Janus Henderson Investors. I'm Laura Thomas, and today I will be joined by James de Summeres, Director and Head of Investment Trusts at Janus Henderson. James and I discuss the current economic disruptions caused by the coronavirus outbreak, how the current bear market compares to other recent financial downturns, what we've learned from them, and in what ways we're better equipped to deal with them. But before we get into that, I must tell you that this episode is brought to you in association with Janus Henderson Investors. It's for promotional purposes and for UK investors only. The value of an investment can fall as well as rise. Past performance is not a guide to future performance, and nothing in this podcast should be construed as advice. Anything said in this episode is the view of the fund manager when we recorded and may have changed as events have developed over time. Our discussion is for illustrative purposes only. References made to individual securities should not constitute or form part of any offer or solicitation to issue, sell, subscribe, or purchase a security. Welcome to the show, James. Thanks for joining me today. So let's just dive right into our discussion about the environment we currently find ourselves in. So I think as of close of play on Friday, 24th of April, the FTSE All Share Index has fallen about 25% year to date. To what extent do you feel that the current market downturn is specifically the result of the COVID-19 global lockdown rather than a fundamental market correction?
Well, I think that you can't escape the fact that it's very definitely the result of a COVID-19 global lockdown. What's caused the market correction was really a collapse in demand out in the market and a deliberate, intentional business shutdown and therefore collapse in supply. And, you know, that is bound to cause a recession. If you get that sort of economic impact of closure of business, then you're bound to have that sort of negative reaction. And it immediately saw reductions in profits, reductions in business activity, and the market corrected accordingly. I would say that I don't think it was the only factor, because I think the other factor that's important is oil. And there was an oil price collapse just before we had the lockdown and COVID-19 really took off. And there were signs in the oil market that everything was not well. And of course, since the global lockdown and the significant reduction in the amount of oil being used across the world, because everyone's stuck in their houses and can't go about their business, that's made that even more acute. So I think that something was going to cause some jitters in the market because of what was going on in the oil market. But fundamentally, the reason we had the market correction was the global shutdown caused by COVID-19.
No, absolutely. Because it's been interesting how over the last couple of years, there's been a few market commentators sort of talking about being at the end of the cycle. So it's kind of an interesting thought just to think if where we are at now is more connected or could be connected to being towards the end of the cycle, or if in fact, the global lockdown as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic is really the main cause. So I suppose that kind of leads on to my next question, really, which is, looking at calling or being able to identify the bottom of the market. Obviously, that's something that's never easy to do, and we can't predict the future as well if there might be another. But do you think we've perhaps seen that, or that we might be close to it, or indeed if there might be more to go?
Well, we've obviously seen a bottom in terms of the market correction, because the market corrected very dramatically, and it has recovered from that position. And that is usual with these types of corrections. I think the problem that we have here is that markets like certainty, and there is still a lot of uncertainty about what will happen once lockdown finishes, how quickly we'll be able to get back to business as usual, how quickly companies will be able to get up and running and restore to profitability. So I think that with that uncertainty, some of which I would say is, as we say, in the price. But nevertheless, that uncertainty does mean that it's not impossible that there would be another correction as people understand better what the true impact of COVID-19 ultimately will be. However, I'm positive in the sense that I think that a lot of that is in the price. And I think probably the correction we saw will have been the bottom.
And so do you think then, thinking about that then, that there are ever any particular signs of the market, or when the market bottoms out, generally speaking?
Well, usually the sign that the market bottoms is when the investors in the market, particularly professional investors, start buying it. You know, when we saw that this time is the market corrected very substantially, and then the professional investors decided there was value in the market and started buying it. They don't always get it right. You know, sometimes it falls a bit further, but in those circumstances, they'll probably still buy. And the fact that they're buying will stop the correction, and the market will start to move up again. So I think it's actually just buying activity in the market that signals that that the market's crashed as far as it's going to crash.
And if we look back at previous market downturns and previous bear markets, how do you think the current market conditions compares to those kind of maybe more recent ones, you know, i.e. the global financial crisis, or indeed the dot-com bubble and burst in the year 2000? What are your thoughts on the kind of the comparisons between those?
Well, I think this one's very, very different. I mean, in 2008, in the global financial crisis, I think the S&P 500 fell 30%, but over a 12-month period. That's quite a long period over which the market has steadily fallen. You know, whereas in this case, we saw a very dramatic fall. And in that sense, it's much more similar to the 1987 stock market crash, which was known as Black Monday, when markets in both the US and the UK fell some 23% in 2 days. And indeed, Australia, if I remember, fell sort of 40%. So there was it's a really big correction very, very quickly. So I think it's very similar. I think the difference is that the market started recovering fairly quickly after 87. And, you know, now if you look at the charts, it just looks like a blip. At the time, it was a very, very big thing. Here, we've had a bit of a correction, but I think we've got to wait and see, you know, what the real outturn from COVID-19 is before we know that we're back on a steady upward path again.
Yes, now we're frequently reading the term unprecedented times, aren't we, at the moment, in various, you know, media outlets, just trying to describe and get our heads around the current situation. So I think there's certainly an element there of, you know, everybody trying to understand the current situation and moving forward. Still looking at some of those previous market downturns, what do you think we've learned from those that have helped equip us, you know, and businesses and fund managers better to respond to the current situation?
Well, I think companies did learn, and they certainly learned from the global financial crisis. A lot of companies went into the global financial crisis over indebted, with their balance sheets very stretched. And that's all been put right. A lot of companies were in very good shape at the time of this correction. Balance sheets very strong, you know, debt carefully under control and sensible. So I think they were well positioned. But the problem is this is, you know, unprecedented, this type of activity. And it makes it extremely difficult for anybody to plan for it. And I don't think people have. And you know, the damage that COVID-19 is going to do is, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But I think that companies were, you know, prepared, but in better shape, let's say. But I don't think you can prepare yourself for something that's, as you put it, unprecedented.
No, of course. And what do you think when it comes to looking at specific sectors or geographies? Do you think that there are any in particular that will hold up better than others, or indeed some that might be noticeably poorer than others?
Well, not in the case of geographies. I mean, COVID-19 is a global pandemic. It's affected every country in the world. And so I think in geographies terms, all geographies are going to be impacted by this. So I don't think there's anything there. But in the case of sectors, yeah, very definitely. I mean, there are obviously some sectors that are going to do very, very badly out of this. The travel industry, for example, the leisure sector, general retail, you know, even the oil companies, I mean, you know, are not doing particularly well out of this with the global drop in demand for oil. So, yeah, I mean, I think there are sectors that are going to suffer really quite substantially. But equally, there's going to be sectors that are going to flourish in this environment. The obvious one being the food retailers, who've seen a significant uptake in their business. I think other consumer staple businesses will do quite well. The utilities, are pretty robust regardless of what's going on out in the market, because we all need to use electricity and gas, etc. And probably the pharmaceutical companies would do quite well out of it. So I think that you know, there are very definitely some winners and losers in this environment.
No, indeed. And let's not forget, of course, obviously, with everybody working from home, I'm sure tech companies have probably seen a sharp spike as well. So I think if we're now turning to the dividends aspect of the market, you know, we've seen a lot of announcements come from a lot of companies calling to have to suspend or cancel their dividend in the current environment. Looking more generally, what's your view of the importance of dividends to total returns?
Well, I mean, you know, total return is a combination of income and capital growth, i.e. the share price of your investment actually going up. And I think that, you know, dividends are important because a company paying dividends is generally a well-run, mature company in a good position, making good profits. So it's a sign of a good company if it's paying dividends. But there are very good companies that don't pay dividends, and you know, in the technology sector is a prime example. So you know, I think at the end of the day, if you're in the investment trust world, particularly if you're a company that has an income objective, then dividends are very, very important. Anybody who's buying the shares wants to have more of their total return in income than necessarily in capital growth. But if you're in an investment trust where total return's your objective, you don't really mind whether that comes from income or capital. So therefore, I think that it's not a problem for some companies, I think, certainly investors, if companies stop their dividends. Ultimately, if you get the return with a bit more capital and a bit less income, then I think that's fine. But obviously, for the income trusts, the ones that are paying dividends, you know, seeing a reduction in dividends is not good. And that will impact those companies because they're focusing on paying dividends more than they are generating capital growth. So you've got some funds that have, you know, there's a dividend bias towards their total return expectations, and then there's others that have much more flexible open basis. So dividends are important, but they're not everything.
No, of course. And I think it's quite interesting as well, isn't it? Because when we're looking at dividends, obviously from, you know, we've touched on the total return aspect there. And if you're looking at it from kind of the income specific aspect, you know, one of the benefits of the investment trust structure of being a closed end fund is having the revenue reserve facility. So that facility where the investment trust can hold back up to 15% of income in any year to be able to use in times of difficulty, or indeed a rainy day, shall we say. So that's quite an interesting and different feature than investment trusts have compared to an open-ended fund. And indeed, you know, the absence of inflows and outflows of capital also renders investment trusts well-suited to the short-term vagaries of equity markets. What else do you think structurally investment trusts have that can help benefit shareholders, particularly looking at the current environment and volatile times?
Well, I think there are two other things about the investment trust structure that make it very well-suited for this type of market and to support and look after shareholders. And the first of those is actually the independent boards of directors that investment trusts must have. You know, it's good for any investment manager to have proper governance and challenge and question over his or her investment strategy and approach. And I think these boards of directors, you know, they are experienced people who've got very, very good careers. They know what they're talking about. They've had a wealth of experience. And I think that they're able to apply that to challenging the fund managers in terms of what they're doing. And I think that, you know, I think fund managers relish that, and I think it improves their ability to run and to manage the portfolio. And I think that's a big advantage because it doesn't happen in quite the same way on open-ended funds. And I think the second big advantage of the structure in this type of market is investment trusts are able to gear. That is to say, they're able to borrow money with the objective of getting a better return from that money than the cost of borrowing it. And in volatile markets, and particularly in markets that have had a sharp correction, the ability to be able to increase your gearing and invest that money into the market at very low levels can make a major contribution to an enhanced total return over a relatively short space of time going forward. So, you know, gearing in volatile markets, I mean, obviously gearing's a double-edged sword. If you get it wrong and you gear up and the market goes down, then you do very badly. But, you know, if the market's already very down and you gear up and invest and the market recovers, then you're going to do that very much better. So I think gearing can be a very, very useful tool for an investment trust manager.
Excellent. Well, James, that's all we have time for, but thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks again to James for joining me to discuss investment trusts, bear markets, and the impact of the coronavirus. And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share this with anyone you think will also find it interesting. If you want to learn more about investment trusts, we have a wealth of information available on our website, which you can find in the show notes. Glossary. Bear market. A financial market in which the prices of securities are falling. A generally accepted definition is a fall of 20% or more in an index over at least a two-month period. The opposite of a bull market. Late cycle. Asset performance is often driven largely by cyclical factors tied to the state of the economy. Economies and markets are cyclical, and the cycles can last from a few years to nearly a decade. Generally speaking, early cycle is when the economy transitions from recession to recovery. Mid-cycle is when recovery picks up speed, while in the late cycle, growth slows, wages start to rise, and inflation begins to pick up. At this stage, investors become invariably bullish, believing that prices will continue to rise. Gearing. A measure of a company's leverage that shows how far its operations are funded by lenders versus shareholders. It is a measure of the debt level of a company. Within investment trusts, it refers to how much money the trust borrows for investment purposes. Market correction. A correction is a decline of more than 10% in a major stock index, e.g. the FTSE 100. Before investing in an investment trust referred to in this podcast, you should satisfy yourself as to its suitability and the risks involved. You may wish to consult a financial advisor. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested. Nothing in this podcast is intended or should be construed as advice. This podcast is not a recommendation to sell or purchase any investment. It does not form part of any contract for the sale or purchase of any investment. Issued in the UK by Janus Henderson Investors. Janus Henderson Investors is the name under which investment products and services are provided by Janus Capital International Limited. Registration number 359-4615. Henderson Global Investors Limited. Registration number 906355. Henderson Investment Funds Limited. Registration number 2678531. Alpha Gen Capital Limited. Registration number 962757. Henderson Equity Partners Limited. Registration number 2606646. Each registered in England and Wales at 201 Bishopsgate, London, EC2M3AE, and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. And Henderson Management SA, registration number B22848, at 2 Rue de Bitburg, L-1273, Luxembourg, and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier. Janus Henderson, Janus Henderson, Perkins, Intec, AlphaGen, Velocity Shares, Knowledge Shared, Knowledge Shared, and Knowledge Labs are trademarks of Janus Henderson Group PLC or one of its subsidiaries. Copyright Janus Henderson Group PLC.